Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thank you, Joe. This hour on the score brought to us by Gurnee Hyundai. When searching for a new Hyundai, search for GurneeHyundai.com.
Mully and Hanley, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
Everything's different. So, you know, in the playoffs, you're doing the, you know, the, I call them the prediction interviews where you got to talk the day before your start and kind of predict what's going to happen. And, you know, the only other time that happens is opening day. And then you've got, you know, all the other hoopla going wrong with it.
Every year it's the same, you know, hope springs eternal, right? And it's the beginning of whatever storyline you want to give it. It's the beginning of it. I'm sure with ups and downs, but you're always entering it with an optimistic viewpoint. I think we're very happy with the way all these guys have gone about their business this spring, and it's just a culmination of that and knowing that you're getting out to get the regular season going and seeing what kind of story is going to be told.
And here they come.
It is opening day. You got Mully and Hanley on the score. Thanks for being with us. And John Lester, you heard his voice talking about the interview, the perfunctory prediction interview. We gave you some of our predictions. We're interested in yours. 312-644-6767 is the number. And the second voice you heard, of course, is the Sox skipper Ricky Renteria. And it is hope springs eternal, but he's probably unsure, just like Sox fans, as to what you're going to see by September with these White Sox and who you'll see on the field for these White Sox. Let's go to the phones. 312-644-6767 is the number. Crowley is out there, and are you down in Miami, Crowley? Are you getting ready for the big Cubs Southern home opener?
I am in Miami. I have taken my talents to South Beach, my friend.
Plenty of good seats available.
Hey, you know,
that would be a Cubs crowd down there, right?
Yes, it's you know, it's funny. I got an email from the Marlins yesterday. I guess there's going to be a concert by DJ Khaled and Pooh Bear.
Yeah,
I didn't know them. I had no idea who they were, so I looked them up, and apparently they're doing some sort of Marlins theme song.
I'm sure nobody ever heard of
it. It's just as awful as you can imagine. So I asked them if they'd learned Go Cubs Go, but I've gotten no response on Twitter yet.
Oh, boy.
But it's going to be a fun season, guys. I think this team is really, like I said, they're rested. To me, when you take a look at the pitching staff, I think they're better than they were in 2016 as far as the pitchers. You know, you swapped out Hamill and Lackey, and you got Darvish and Chatwood and Quintana. You know, this is a team that's hungry, it's ready to go, and I think it's going to be a fun time today here in Miami.
Any questions about the bullpen? And you know, quietly, you know, a week or so ago, everyone's wondering if Pedro Strop's even going to be on the roster. Is he healthy enough? He's quietly had quite a little closing spring run there in the last couple of weeks.
And if you look at the bullpen, I'm not too worried. Those things, you know, bullpens have these ebb and flows. Whether you see these same guys at the end of the season, I don't know. But if you take a look at it, their walk rate was way down this spring. So that was something I know that was a big bone of contention last year.
Yeah, got Chris Bosio fired.
Yeah, and so, you know, Jim Hickey's in now, and we'll take a look. Chili Davis also. I like all the coaching changes that they made. I think this is just going to be a really – I feel like it's just that hangover is gone, and you feel refreshed, and you're ready to go party again.
How many wins, regular season wins for the Cubs? Does it matter?
I'm going to go 95.
All right, right in the ballpark. All right, Crowley, enjoy.
Take care, guys.
All right, take care.
We'll see you on Monday.
I have to say that Marlins Park, when I was on the 3-year Cubs tour,
yeah.
Marlins Park was actually one of my favorite ballparks just because it was extremely, it is extremely unique. There's a cheesiness to it with that big sculpture out there, but there's so many stadiums that look exactly the same that was in my top five.
Head out to the Clevelander?
The Clevelander, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was also the easiest park to get people who requested tickets.
So
how many do you need, Mark? Yeah, 20, 30? Like usually it's like, here's a handful of tickets for you if you'd like to give them to friends, family, or whatever. Marlins Park, it was like...
Good section still available.
Yeah. We have a section for you if you'd like to give it to
some of
your
Yeah, when I was covering the
friends.
Cubs, that was one of those trips is when Harry was dehydrated, in air quotes, and he had a limo on call 24/7 on the road.
That's awesome.
Like, we'd get off the charter, And we walked down the steps to a team bus, and there's a limo waiting for Harry. And Bob Verdi, one time, I think we were in New York, and he's like, you know, telling Verdi, get in the limo. We're gonna hit the ground running.
There we go.
Well, we were in Philadelphia one time, and Barry Rosner was, we were walking back with Ron Santo, and we saw Harry going into a place with his limo driver, and he's like, I'll give you a ride to the hotel. And we're like, Harry, it's like four blocks. Well, we're going in here first. Now, come on. And, you know, I was worried because I think the limo driver was drinking more than we were. But anyway, Harry down there spent the night going up and down, the east coast of Florida.
Yeah.
And then he rolled into a 90-degree humid day in the ballpark. Next thing you know, down goes Harry in the dugout.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, he was taken to the hospital and rehydrated.
Wow. Barry Rosner.
What a lousy ball club. Ron, our buddy on the south side. Morning, Ron.
Hey, Brian. Good morning, guys, and happy opening day. Couple of things. I think it was Kevin Zipak said 78 wins for the White Sox. And that's what I'm taking about 78 wins.
Z, did you have 75 for the Sox?
Yeah, I had 78, but one of the guys said 78. But just looking forward, Brian, really to seeing Mercado, particularly batting at the top of that batting order. You know, I did read where he could possibly at one time be a 30-30, you know, player. So just looking forward to a lot. I actually wish Lucas Giolito was taking the ball today.
Yeah,
but yeah, just a lot of optimism. But I'll give my picks, Brian, with Houston. Just add gear. They can beat you so many ways. They can beat you with that pitching and their offense. So I'm taking them to repeat. And believe it or not, I still like the Dodgers. To me, they got the best pitcher in the game. They got a good closer. The offense is good. So I actually am picking a repeat. And I'm picking Houston to win it again. So, hey, guys, just have a great day. And
glad you're
looking forward to the season.
Thanks for picking up the phone. It's not opening Always day without pleasure, talking Brian. To Ron. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate it. Boy, how about that? A repeat. Dodgers and Astros, and a repeat right down to the Astros hoisting the trophy.
It's not a crazy pick. I mean, it feels like a lot of people are looking past the Dodgers this year, considering how great they were last year in the regular season, how close they came to winning a World Series as well. So I certainly don't count those guys out. I like that Ron brought up Lucas Giolito, because to me, he is the most important part of the White Sox this year, because he's the one prospect that is, well, Moncada as well, but pitching is still extremely important, regardless of the fact that you're building this thing up with a whole lot of different position players. Lucas Giolito, from start to finish, the guy's 23 years old, and I am anxious to see what he can do, because at the end of the day, you're still going to need to put together a beefy starting rotation, and that's what the Cubs did. They had historic starting pitching when they won the World Series, regardless of all the position players that they had signed. So to me, Lucas Giolito is the most important White Sox player to watch this year, because he is start to finish and he's a starting pitcher.
Do you have one on the north side?
I do. Most important player to me. I mean, we're not talking about the obvious.
We know Rizzo and
Bryant. Those guys are incredibly important.
Yeah, the expectations for them should be kind of unanimous.
Yeah,
right?
You know, I said this earlier. Carl Edwards Jr. to me is the most important player on the Cubs this year, because you don't know about Brandon Morrow for sure. We think he can be a closer, but we don't know for sure. You know, Pedro Strop is still there, been good, but he's had the calf issues and some other various injuries as well. Justin Wilson, big question mark on him.
He can't be any worse than last year.
Yeah, and
right?
At times, Carl Edwards Jr. was the best pitcher out of that Cubs bullpen this year, this side of Wade Davis. And he did have some flops. There's no doubt about it, but I think that there's still potential greatness in Carl Edwards Jr., and I still think that ultimately they would like him to be the closer. Not next year, probably, but maybe the season after.
How old is C.J. Edwards?
He's like 24 maybe.
But it's amazing.
So
it seems like every 26.
Really?
Then this year kind of has to, you better take a step, right? I mean, the inconsistency has to go away at some point, because every year it seems like, well, you know, the guy's got the stuff.
Yeah.
It could be his time.
I mean, I understand that the flops are super loud, but there's been moments of greatness as well. I mean, where Carl was just absolutely lights out in big-time spots.
Well, the World Series run, I mean, Joe's faith in the bullpen came down to basically Chapman and Edwards, right?
I mean, everybody else sit down.
Yeah.
Rondon and Strope.
Yeah.
To me, Remy. It's Carl this year, like, in terms of what the next step that he has to take and just be ready to be put in even bigger situations, as if he hasn't been put in big spots already, even bigger spots this year to take the next step.
You know, we have a texter here saying, absolutely hate people keep saying there was a hangover last year for the Cubs, and then they predict them to win the exact same number of games this year as last year, and you know about the horrendous start, you know, the slow start coming out April, May, the dig a 5.5 game hole in the division.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Theo's being asked questions. Well, could you be a seller at the trade deadline if this thing doesn't get turned around in the next 2.5-3 weeks? And he actually acknowledges that's a possibility. And,
right.
and then they get their stuff together and go on a pretty good run in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have the slow start, and you got to win the series that you're supposed to win. I mean, there were some dreadful moments
against
last
bad
year. Bad teams, that road trip in San Diego and L.A. last year, where they were 0-6 or 0-7 on the road trip, but you get swept by San Diego. You lost a series to Philadelphia when you couldn't afford to be losing.
That's a hell of a team.
A series. So, yeah, I mean, there's some really obvious spots this year where the Cubs can improve, and it starts with a series with the Marlins.
Yeah, I mean you know, we were talking about, okay, what happens if they lose today?
Right,
and,
they lose 7-2 today.
If better not be Morrow collapsing in the ninth. There's no excuse to lose this series or a game in this series.
And, you know, it's one game, but we are required in sports radio to overreact to the first game of the season.
But, I mean, really, you have to win these series, and you really, there's no excuse not to win each game in this of the three against Miami. I mean, Miami... There's tanking, and then there's what Miami's doing.
Oof. Yeah.
Right? I mean, then you go to
tanking with no plan.
Yeah, then you go to Cincinnati.
Same deal.
Have you anything less than 5-1 after the first six games?
I mean,
that was
be.
Not a good good opening two series.
Yeah, I don't really get what Cincinnati. I get what they're trying to do, and that is to drop the bottom out and rebuild. But there's just not those buzzword names being brought up throughout the Cincinnati organization like there have been for the other teams that tanked. I do want to address one texter here. It says, commenting on something that I said, ballparks that look exactly the same, Do you not remember the cookie cutter era? There's a lot of really nice ballparks that exist now, like because there's a lot of relatively new parks, but they're all sort of cut from the same cloth. And they're great. They're extremely comfortable. Not a lot of uniqueness.
But like Riverfront, Three Rivers, I mean, if you just walked up on one of them, you could have walked up on the other one.
No, I totally understand, but there's a lot of ballparks like that even now that are, like I said, really nice ballparks. But they all sort of have the same feel. And I remember those, too. I was never at those stadiums, but I remember watching them on TV, the Three Rivers.
Horrendous,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, those were bad ballparks. The new ballparks now, they're really nice, comfortable, accommodating, perfect ballparks. Well, but they're all cut from the same cloth. And that's why I like Marlins Park.
I mean, Miller Park, everyone enjoys going up there. All the retractable roof stadiums are terrific. You know, back in the day, the Astrodome, I remember covering games in there. And you would go in there in the bright Texas sun, you know, on a day game in particular, and you walked in. It was like walking into a crypt for like 6 hours. And you'd walk out at 5 o'clock into the blazing sun still. And you really felt like you had just been embalmed for 6 hours. And I mean, just horrific. I mean, to call, you know, there was the eighth wonder of the world when it was built. Yeah. And why.
What I remember about when watching Cubs games. In those, like in Houston and especially in Montreal, in the old Expo Dome, was hearing Dutch Renner, the home plate umpire, call strike, and you'd hear it echo like on TV, strike one, and you just hear this. It would just fill up the stadium because of the six fans that were in the stands.
Yeah, covered games there too, and it was watching Vlad Jr. have the walk off there the other night. I mean, I don't know if baseball's heading back to Montreal eventually, but Olympic Stadium, it can't be there. Can't be there, and there were. You could hear the people talking in the first row when you were up in the press box because nobody was there. This segment of the show brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. 312-644-6767 is the number. You got Molly and Hanley with Mark Crotty sitting in for Mike on Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You just look at this 5-man rotation. And having a chance to win the ball game on a daily basis, and there's really no one in that group that you would be reluctant to say, yeah, he's going to give us a chance to win that ball game. So it's an exciting group from front to back.
That's new Cubs pitching coach Jim Hickey, Chicago's very own Southside guy, and we get to visit with him each and every week throughout the baseball season here on the Molly and Hanley Show. part of our conversation with Jim yesterday. And that said, you heard Jim and his faith in the starting staff. A lot of our texters weighing in, 670-11, 670-11. If you want to text the show, and some people not exactly sold on Yu Darvish yet, more of a wait-and-see attitude when it comes to the Cubs' new $125 million man. And, you know, interesting, Mark Grody brings up the most important Cub is C.J. Edwards. I think a lot of people have concerns about how that bullpen's going to set up, just because the last time we saw, or most of the time we saw Justin Wilson last year, it was not very good. He couldn't find the strike zone. And Theo has full faith in Brandon Morrow, says absolutely he's your closer. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's not an audition. It's not by committee. And we'll see if he, you know, rewards that faith. But do you have any concerns with this Cubs Cubs roster and pitching? I mean, do you have any concerns about the starting rotation? Do you worry about how you're going to get to Brandon Morrow and what he's going to do once he gets the ball? 312-644-6767. And a lot of texters weighing in on your suggestion that Giolito is the guy for you, most important White Sox player this year. And they, too, would like to see him take the ball instead of James Shields today, even though Giolito will be the home opening pitcher, right? So there you go.
Yeah, and, you know, so the Cubs starting rotation, too, it does look grand on paper. There's no doubt about it. You know, there are a couple of questions, and I think that John Lester is one as well. And it's easy to forget that John Lester did not have a great season last year. There was a couple of games where he was looked as bad as anybody in baseball.
Was that 8 runs in the first inning when he and Bossio got into it in the dugout?
Yeah. I mean,
before the All-Star break, right?
Mm-hmm, there was some.
Dennis and I had tickets for that game.
It was at Wrigley, right?
He was out of the game before we even got there. It's the second inning.
Fashionably late arriving Kevin Zipak.
You know,
I got to make an entrance. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's, I mean, Lester is 34 years old. It's at some point in time, there's going to be that natural decline that will exist. I don't know if we started to see it last year. He could be just as good as ever. You know, he's a guy that depends upon location more than he does velocity, so that portends well for John Lester. And then, you know, as far as Yu Darvish is concerned, I think Yu Darvish is fine, but there were real things that happened that were really bad for him last year in the postseason.
You better buy into the tipping the pitches thing in the World Series, because that's the last you saw of him. And what was that, the 21 ERA in the two appearances in the World Series?
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs fans should hope that it was that he was tipping pitches, because that wasn't the case, and he lost something as well. But I have faith that the Cubs did their homework too. I mean, we talk about this in terms of the pitch tipping, and maybe he took a step down or two. I think Cubs fans can trust that Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and the scouting staff did their part before they signed him to
absolutely
a whopper deal. Right. So
that's
where you take solace.
Believe me, I mean, they were not going to offer Jake Arrieta the same money, no matter that report that Theo checked in with Scott Boras and said, hey, if Darvish turns us down, you know, hold tight. We got something for you and Jake. It wasn't going to be that deal. It was going to be closer to the deal that he got with the Phillies, because I don't think the Cubs came off that number. But, you know, it's interesting when we talked to Chris Jimenez weeks ago.
Jimmy.
Talking about the tipping of the pitches since he caught a dozen games with of Darvish's back in Texas. He said there might be something to do. You know, he's watching that. He's thinking there's something up too. But he said, you know, Darvish is one of those pitchers, even if he thinks you know what's coming, he's got enough confidence slash cockiness to say, I'm still going to throw that pitch, because that's a pitch I want to throw in this situation, that the stuff's going to get hit, you know, get by you anyway, even if you know the fastball's coming, one of his four or five fastballs, if you're buying the 11 pitch theory on. And Jim Hickey scoffed at that a little bit yesterday. You know, 5+ pitches, I don't think anyone disagrees with that.
Expect that from Hick.
Yeah, that from Hick. And I wanted to ask you about John Lester, but you were around him for so long. The idea that he has to be more of a leader this year, because Lackey and the very vocal and never hide your emotions, John Lackey's no longer here. I mean, I always considered John Lester one of the leaders of the team.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, does he have to do something differently this year?
No, and it's interesting you bring that up, because Anthony Rizzo got all the credit. And he, you know, Anthony Rizzo, he's like the popular kid in class that everybody wants to be around and sort of get and have his acceptance. That's the way it worked in the clubhouse. And Rizzo was extremely affable towards everybody. But John Lester was a leader too. And he was kind of like that guy that you got to go through John Lester, watch your mouth, because Lester is, you know, a guy that will keep the clubhouse in check as well. So, I don't think he has to take another step up. He has to do the same thing that he always did. And, you know, there was some leadership from Blackie as well.
And the whole David Ross stuff, that behind closed doors or behind the scenes, he wasn't, you know, the serial affable guy we got to visit with every Friday.
Absolutely.
He was a guy who also kept people in check and would get in your face.
Kept the media in check at times. And overall, David Ross is good. I mean, I saw Ross doing it in the clubhouse. I would see him do it on the charters. Mm-hmm. And like he kept things in check. And it was good because – And it wasn't Rizzo doing it. It was the vocal one, the guy who wasn't afraid to say things and, you know, be a bad guy, quote unquote, was David Ross. There's no doubt about it. And John Lester is the same way. Rizzo kind of just leads in the guy that you need to have Rizzo's approval to.
So Bryant doesn't strike me as that guy. And
no.
Rizzo is not that guy. Is Contreras going to be that guy? Is he? I mean, we've seen him yell at Lester, just throw the damn ball over there.
Yeah, he could be. I think he still needs to earn a little bit of that from the rest of the clubhouse, just because he kind of has that fiery attitude already. So it's coming for Wilson Contreras, and I think that he embraces it too.
Can Hayward be that guy? We know the motivational speech during the rain delay will go down in history, Cubs history and Cubs lore. But given his struggles and, you know, here's hoping that he turns around this year. But if you're a betting man, you'd probably think you're going to see pretty much the same Jason Hayward you've seen the first couple of years. He seems like he would want to be that guy.
Well, he kind of is already. I mean, but he's probably one of the most liked and respected guys in that clubhouse.
Does that diminish if his performance continues?
Well, it hasn't yet.
Yeah.
I mean, the players have steadfastly been behind him, and obviously it's different from the fans and from media and all that kind of stuff for Jason Hayward, but there is nobody that is more liked in that clubhouse and respected, and I mean that, than Jason
Hayward.
That's
interesting, because normally, you know, the guy's not pulling his weight, and then everyone knows how much you're making. At some point, whatever your workplace, you know, like,
he's good to people, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he gets it, and he's not afraid to give advice to other players.
Throw an arm around a guy.
Absolutely, and help out where need be.
Let's check in with Ray in Crystal Lake. He's on the score. Morning, Ray.
Morning. Certainly, relief pitching's an issue, but I'm concerned about the offense. They got all the big names. Last year, it seemed like that was really a concern, certainly down the stretch. I'll hang up and listen to what you think.
All right. I mean, you know, the runners in scoring position, batting average was an issue. You know, again, especially with two outs, that, again, I think most people, they end up with 840 runs scored. I see a baseball prospectus has them at 822 or right, give or take a run, for the Chicago Cubs this year. I think I have it right here. Actually, they're projecting 814 runs.
Okay.
So down from last year, but it wasn't so much how much offense. They weren't clubbing teams, right? They weren't. We weren't sitting here monitoring run differential day to day, you know, on the historic pace that they had the year previous, where you're winning games by 4 and 5 runs. But it's also the time, you know, when you get those RBI, when you hit those, you know, get those key hits, and when you score those runs.
They fell behind a lot last year, especially early on, where even their wins they were having
first inning. I mean, first inning, pitchers go out there and give you a 2-0 hole.
That was a problem spot. A texter brings up as the most important Cub, and this is a great answer, and he probably hasn't been talked about enough, and that's Mike Montgomery, who, you know, is still that swingman potential. He's going to get some starts this year. I can probably guarantee that. Somebody's going to miss a start here or there, and he's going to have a start or two. But I still think that he can be a straight-up star reliever, and he's flirted with that at times. But I think that, you know, he's incredibly important, obviously, to that staff, especially if Justin Wilson doesn't make marked improvement.
He's Mark Grote. He's sitting in for Mully. You get Mully and Hanley on the score. Going to bring Bruce Levine into our conversation. It's opening day. No better day for sports fans and baseball fans in particular. Check in with Joe Ostrowski and then talk to Bruce and take your calls. 312-644-6767. It's scoreboard update time.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Love the morning start for the Cubs, don't you? There's something just novel about that.
11:10 right here, pregame on the score, and 11:40 first pitch down in Miami. The Cubs and Marlins get at it, and the White Sox in Kansas City, 3:05 first pitch for the Chicago White Sox. And it's opening day. We're going to be talking a lot of baseball. We'll be checking in down in San Antonio with the Ramblers. Mike Florio going over some of the NFL headlines, and there are a lot of those coming out of the owners' meetings. But Joe Ostrowski just mentioned the stat line that LeBron had last night, 41 and was it 41-10 and change, and 41-10 rebounds, 8 assists. And he said yesterday, asked the question, who would you vote for MVP? I'd vote for me.
Sure.
Things you never heard MJ really say, but he obviously was thinking the same thing. But if you're an NBA fan, is it LeBron? He's been terrific the last
few. Don't you think Jordan shrugged or was sort of like punching walls when Charles Barkley would win or Karl Malone
absolutely.
Would steal his MVP? LeBron James has been ripped off of MVPs in the past, and he could pop. Of course, LeBron James would deserve to get the MVP.
But
it's
James Harden this year, right?
It is. It's going to be James Harden, but who's the most valuable player in the NBA?
Yeah, and LeBron last
LeBron
night.
LeBron James.
That's the answer. LeBron, 866th consecutive game with at least 10 points last night, tying MJ, and yesterday was the anniversary of the MJ 69-point game back in 1990. So, interesting stuff. But we're talking baseball today, and we're talking with you. 312-644-6767. You got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Play ball!
Bruce Levi, 670, the score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a herd of speeding turtles.
I like turtles. All right, you're great zombie.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I love you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
And we head down to Miami, and Bruce Levine, score baseball expert, covering the Chicago Cubs. Pre-game right here, 11:05. Don't miss a minute of it. Right here on the score, you got Cubs and Marlins. First pitch about 11:40 after the opening day ceremonies, and it is opening day throughout baseball. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. And how about this? 9 new Chicago Cubs from the opening day lineup last year. 13 new Chicago White Sox from the opening day last year. That's quite a turnover for two teams that one in certainly in the mode of winning a championship, the other still seeking more players to build a championship club.
Yeah, what, only 14 remaining Cubs from the World Series team?
Yeah, I think that's right. I was counting them up, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12.
What do you appreciate?
Yeah. Somewhere around there. Not as many pitchers as you would imagine left with only 2 starting pitchers left from that championship team, and the bullpen, I think 3 new guys, maybe 4 at this point, considering the opening day. So it is certainly an ever-changing world in baseball, no matter how good or bad you are.
Bruce, 9 new Cubs players you mentioned. Out of that bunch, who is the most important this year?
Oh, I would have to say Morrow at the end of the game. Brandon Morrow, who started his career many years ago as a closer and then ended up as a starting pitcher for Toronto. And the injury factor has been huge for him during his career. I mean, he's had a lot of shoulder issues. When he's out there and he's healthy, he's one of the more dominant pitchers in the game. You saw it last year. I think the Dodgers used him every game in the playoffs last year. And he brings 97 miles an hour and a nasty breaking ball and a lot of composure. The key for him, guys, is staying healthy. And that's a key for the Cubs, because if it's not him, you have to turn to Edwards or Wilson or Strope. None of those are a known commodity at the end of a game. So from that perspective, I think he's your number one most important guy. You're losing a guy that saved 31 out of 32 games last year.
And Mark did zero in on C.J. Edwards Jr. as the most important Cub, and because you're not, he's shown flashes. He was one of the two guys that Joe leaned on and had faith in the World Series a couple seasons back. He is 26 now. Is he ready to be a more consistent pitcher or to take even another step in his career?
I think there's a fear factor for the Cubs, knowing that last year he wore down, and that maybe more mentally at the end, he wasn't the pitcher that he had been. I mean, during the season, he was as good as anybody from, the setup role and the seventh inning on. But, it's a different animal closing games out. And if he has to go into that role, I think there might be some hesitation. Again, mental and physical durability. I think he has the physical part. I'm not quite sure they know that he's able to just go out there and let it fly, not walking people in that role, in the closer's role.
Bruce, just talking about it here, the bullpen is obviously on paper, looks like it has improved. The starting rotation, same deal. Yu Darvish kind of settles everybody into their places. We were talking about the offense, though, and the fact that last year they did struggle with runners in scoring position. They fell behind a lot of come-from-behind type of things. We didn't see the domination in the offense that we saw in 2016. Why will the Cubs' offense be improved this year with not a lot of newness there?
Well, the reason you would have to be hopeful is that nobody outside of Rizzo and Baez had, and of course Contreras coming out, had any type of the years that they had in the previous, time. I mean, you have Bryant, who, although he's a 6.14 WAR player and third best in the National League, didn't have the power numbers that he had the year before, nothing close to the RBIs that he had the year before. You had Russell that had a bad year on and off the field, injured year. You had Zobrist that was completely negated because of injury most of the season. You had situations where Schwarber came out and had a horrible first half, came back in the second half after going to the minor leagues. So, and then you have Happ at the beginning and the leadoff spot, who has looked like a the type of guy that can be a huge impact player along the way. So from that perspective, even though they had problems last year, they were second in the league in runs scored with 822. They were tied for the most in on-base percentage. This is a team, guys, that can score 900 runs this year. They really can. So I think that there's a lot to be optimistic about as far as their offense and run production.
You spent a lot of springtime down in Glendale watching the White Sox and talking to everyone down there. Baseball Prospectus has them projected for a 73-win season. Vegas over-under open at 68, I guess is up to 70.5 wins. Everyone I see, all the predictions, preseason predictions, seem to be in that 73, 74, 75 range. And some people think they could, I think Mark, you said flirting with 500.
500?
Yeah, is that possible?
It is. Well, how many plane crashes are we talking about?
Wow. Come on,
I don't think the White Sox are ready for winning that much. I don't think they, heart of heart, I don't think they want to win that much, honestly, because they still have a lot of work to do. They have talented players in the organization up and down for the first time in since the late 80s, when they had those great drafts for Frank Thomas and Jack McDowell and Ventura and Alex Hernandez. This is the first time they've had that type of talent. But you go up and down their pitching staff, and you look at Giolito, you look at Fulmer, you look at Lopez. There's a lot of work to be done there, guys. Then the other two starters are Gonzalez and Shields. And with all due respect, everything screams out, 68 to 70 wins for the Chicago White Sox. And not to demean them, but the fact is they have a tremendous amount of length to go before they're a championship team. They're on the right track. They have good players coming, but you look at the bullpen, you look at the starters, they are not ready yet. Now, that said, Giolito and Lopez are quality young pitchers. All of a sudden you see Kopech come up, you see Dunning come up, you see some of these other young pitchers on their way. There's a lot to be, a lot to look forward to, but they are not there yet, and I don't see anything close to a 500 season.
Who do we see first, Kopech or Carlos Rodon?
Well, that's a great question, Brian. I knowing Rodon's past and difficulty getting back on the mound, he had the situation last year where he didn't come up till halfway in the season. I would have to say Rodon. Everything goes right. He's up by June. I would say Kopech is a July to August guy, depending on how much good work he does in the minor leagues, how many more trades that the White Sox are able to make. Ideally, Shields has a good year, Gonzalez has a good year, and Jones has a good year, and they're flipped in July going toward August, bringing back more young players. I know Sox fans don't like to hear that the job isn't complete, but they still have another year of rebuilding, and adding more players to the team before they can say, you know, we're ready to go.
Is there more to a guy like Matt Davidson? He's sort of like the forgotten young guy on the Cubs right now. Do Sox fans care about him? And is his ceiling higher than maybe we think or thought? Or what is his ceiling?
Yeah, and then you also hear Matt Davidson, who could be trade bait if he can, you know, continues to do what he's doing in spring training.
Is he a keeper or not? I mean, I can't tell.
Well, he really doesn't have a position. I mean, he can play third base. He can play first base. But he's not proficient at those positions. It's not for not trying. I mean, he certainly has given everything he has. But, you know, feet-wise, he's not a good defensive player. He's an impactful home run hitter is what he is. Could he put up 35 home runs this year? I think he could. He's still going to strike out 170 times, 180 times if he gets 600 at-bats. But that is the modern player. I think he has a place on the White Sox. But as far as, you know, long-term, I really can't answer that other than to say that he's come a long way from a guy that hit 200, and I don't mean 210 or 220 or 230 in the minor leagues. I mean 2 years in a row that he hit 199 and 201. And so this guy's done a lot of work. He's put himself in a position to be a big league player that can hit home runs. You know, I think he can be a nice player for the White Sox, but I can't tell you he's a big part of the future.
One of our 5 of 5 questions, Bruce, Cub home run totals in Vegas set. Chris Bryant, 35.5 over under. Anthony Rizzo, 31.5. Kyle Schwarber, slim down or not, 29.5. This one, Baez, 27.5, and Contreras, 24.5. And who's going to lead the team in home runs? And do any of those numbers seem like out of left field for you?
Well, I think it's a team that I think their home run record is 235 in a season. I think it was done by the 2007 or 18. I think they have a chance to hit 250 home runs. If you go position by position, including whoever is filling in on that day, other than Hayward, you got a chance to hit 25 home runs at every position. So that's pretty unique. I mean, you got 7 or 8 guys. You have 8 guys in the lineup that have already hit over 20 home runs in their career. So from that perspective, there should be a tremendous amount of firepower. But to answer your question, I'm going with Chris Bryant. I think he's going to go up into the 40s this year for home runs. All that firepower around him, and the fact that he played a lot of the year last year with a bad wrist, didn't talk much about it, but certainly injury was a part of it. I think this guy's a 40 to 50 home run guy every single season. He's a threat to do that.
Before Wilson Contreras got injured last year, he had one of the hottest tears of the year of any Cub. Do you believe in the possibility that Wilson Contreras will go to the next level this year and possibly even, considering the position he plays, enter the MVP picture?
Yeah, I do. I picked him to be the MVP of the league, not just the Cubs. And the reason I said that is because he learned to hit the ball the other way, so he's hard to pitch to. His defense has improved dramatically. This spring, we've seen him sit a little bit more behind the plate. That means not come up as much as often to go to the mound. More importantly, to be quiet back there behind the plate and give a better target. He's worked on that, blocking balls. I think the sky is the limit. There's no reason to think that Wilson Contreras can't be the best catcher in baseball for a number of years if he continues on this track.
Bruce, enjoy the game. Day game, 11:05, pregame right here on The Score, and we'll have plenty to talk about with you tomorrow. So,
all right, guys.
Take care.
Have a good one.
He's Bruce Levine, baseball expert here at The Score. Interesting, and we can talk about Texan wanting to know, in fact, if the Cubs, why will their situational hitting be better this year? Is it Chili Davis? Is that where it begins and ends? Or certainly he'd have a say in it, right?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Bruce talked about it a little bit. Like, Addison Russell's year was just so uneven in terms of a bunch of little injuries and the personal issues with which he dealt. And then Kyle Schwarber, too. Kyle Schwarber, he hit the 30 home runs. Well, let's face it, he did not have a good season last year. I mean, he came up in a lot of spots where you needed him to get big hits, and he simply did not. And I don't think that is Schwarber because of what we saw in 2015 and in the World Series in 2016, and last year was just kind of a flop for Kyle Schwarber. So Yeah, I mean, situational hitting has to get better. And there were spots, too, and I can't remember specific games where the Cubs had, you know, bases loaded situations and less than two outs and didn't come through even with their thumpers coming up. So some of that is fluky and some of that is real. And who knows what Chili Davis does to affect that.
Lots of show left. We're going to go down to San Antonio, check in on the Ramblers. And by the way, special score congrats and shout out to the Loyola Chicago team. Cheer them on this Saturday as they take on Michigan. Chance to go to that great Monday championship game. It's brought to you by Subway. New signature wraps right now at Subway restaurants and plenty of football with Mike Florio. Lots more baseball. Gordon Whitmire, Scott Merkin covering the White Sox. Whitmire, of course, our Cubs insider. And the last time, talk to you. 312-644-6767. You got the score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.